Hello and welcome back to another episode of Binge List and Box Office Hits, the podcast about all things film, TV and streaming, with your host, Shannon Holiday, and me, Letitia Thomas.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Binge List and Box Office Hits, the podcast about all things film, TV and streaming. I am your host, Shannon Holiday, and I'm joined in the studio once again with Letitia Thomas. How are we doing this afternoon, Letitia?
We're doing good. I'm in a little food coma from so much cheese and crackers.
Oh my God, I know, right? So we just recorded a different episode this morning. And then we had a bit of a break. We went and got some snacks at Woolworths and we got some...
Shout out to Woolworths, sponsor us.
Shout out Woolworths. Put us on your radio in-store. Thank you. We got some cheese and crackers and some fancy chippies and we watched a few episodes of a absolute chaotic comedy show called I Think You Should Leave, featuring Tim Robinson.
Yeah, I've never seen it before and it was bizarre.
Yeah, what was your thoughts after, like, after viewing that?
I get it. I get the comedy. Some of them I'm like, meh.
And then others, not all hits, but
you're like, you're just crying in absurdist comedy.
Yeah. It's as far absurd as you could get in terms of comedic situations. And I thoroughly loved it. It was very good to have you exposed to that world.
Yeah, it was weird. It was good, but weird.
It was good. But we were very full on cheese and a bit of brie. It was very, very nice. Nicely melted. Very nice.
Yeah, I'm yawning quietly.
Yeah. We're smashing out two episodes in one day. So that's very rare for us. We don't usually do that. But we're like, you know what? This is working. We've got the time. Let's get two out because we did miss last week, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
Yep. I was away for most of the half of the week. So I was like, look, let's just – look, we're missing a week anyway because we're putting Mad Max out earlier. Let's just delay a week in recording. So I haven't seen you for 2 weeks.
No. So we did a bit of a catch up, had a little bit of a...
Yeah, it's been a good morning.
A gossip.
Coffee sesh, some gossip, venting, all the usual and...
all the fun stuff that we can't talk about on the podcast.
I know. Now, we obviously mentioned a lot of the stuff that you watched this week / last week in the last episode, but I've got a couple more that I'll probably go through. I watched the new movie that got added to Netflix recently called Atlas.
I have been seeing some reviews of Atlas.
Starring Jenny from the Block.
Yeah, not great. Not doing great.
It's not doing great because it isn't very good. Mm. A lot of reviews are saying that it could have been written by AI, considering it's a heavily AI-based film. Like in terms of like a dystopian world, futuristic in where terrorist AI cyborgs are trying to fight back. And then they go away for 28 years, but then they might come back to Earth. So they have to build like a protection to Earth. J-Lo's like this smart scientist type. And she works out where the terrorist leader might be. It's a whole thing. Anyway, she goes to this planet. And to survive, she has to be in this exosuit, which is an AI-based exosuit that has like a person that talks to her and stuff. She's really against AI because they turn against her. Her mother died and...
Oh, okay.
All
yep,
that
yeah.
jazz.
Hate
and
by
so
numbers.
She doesn't trust them because they turned against the world. And so throughout the course of the movie, lo and behold, she slowly learns to trust the AI known as Smith.
It's a weird type of propaganda.
It's very strange. And so most of the film, she's stuck in this AI suit. And so she would have filmed it in like one location. And it just wasn't very good. It has, is his name Simu Liu from, Shang-Chi?
Yeah.
He's the villain.
Oh, I love that.
I think he would be good as a villain, but maybe not in like for this. Like, yeah. You know, like this was just not a very good film to begin with. So I don't think he got to act his chops off, so to speak, because he was playing an AI robot villain thing. It was,
I've seen a bit of
wasted talent.
Many J-Lo films in general anyway, just because a lot of hers were big. In the early 2000s.
Yeah, she hasn't really been relevant in films for a while.
I saw her in Hustlers. That was
Hustlers
a pretty decent film. I got a free ticket, actually. That was when work used to give out free tickets.
No, I saw it. I saw it around when it
you
came
You probably
out.
Got a free ticket from
I think
work.
I got a free ticket as well.
Yeah, someone gave it to me.
It was on those little cardboard things. Yeah, I
this
got
was
one
well
too.
Before we were
no, I know, because I think I was at Oxley.
Mm.
And I got a free ticket. So, how I got to see it as well.
Good film. Yeah.
Very good film. Very good film. But that was like the last one I'd say that she was prominent in.
Yeah. Also, shout out to Work. Can you give us more of those free tickets again? That was nice.
Yeah,
thanks.
That was around a time when physical media was supported in stores.
R.I.P.
Yeah, not much anymore. Not much anymore, which is unfortunate.
Unless you're me, apparently, but that's a different story.
Yeah. So I watched that. I didn't particularly love it. So I don't know if I would suggest going out of your way to see it.
I probably won't. There's
I can't think of many other things. Like Netflix films that have done really well lately. Like there was this, there was Unfrosted. What else came out recently? There was a third one that I can't remember off the top of my head. And it was also very average to say the least. Moon,
right,
part two.
Because
that was part one was obviously December. The part two was in April this year, I think. I watched that and ugh. Zack Snyder's Star Wars clone.
Yeah, I don't really tend to watch many of their original movies. Original television shows, I watch a handful. But their movies, like, they're never really like, I never see something and I go, oh my God, I have to watch it.
There's rarely a film that's a streaming film.
They don't really advertise them well either. Well.
Like not even just Netflix, but rarely any of them do very well or are very good. Because I feel like they go theatrical if they're good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very rare. Very rare. So I watched that. But other than that, not really too much. We definitely watched a heavy amount of what this episode is going to be in the past 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've been researching, like watching stuff for the podcast more than I've just been watching random stuff.
Because we had a few weeks lead up to this, which is good. I feel like I didn't crunch 1 week for like 8 films and a couple of TV show episodes and some other stuff as well.
I definitely did. I crunched a lot of it. I enjoyed it.
You did. I didn't. I spread this out a little bit. So I felt like I watched about 4 in 1 week, maybe 3 in the other and stuff like that. It was manageable for me than usual, which is really good. But the biggest part I'll take away is I think we're just going to go straight into it.
Oh, yeah. We're talking about the Muppets this week, guys.
Yeah. If you're not sure of it, we were talking about the Muppets. But the biggest part is I was so glad to go down this – so I wouldn't even say memory lane because it was before our time, both of us. But just kind of dive deep into this world that I wasn't really aware of, that knew it was there, but hadn't got involved in so much.
Yeah, me too. Because obviously, like as a little kid, I watched a ton of Sesame Street. I mean, who didn't watch Sesame Street? But I don't know. I don't remember a lot of Sesame Street. I remember watching it all the time. But in terms of like actual memories of the content and plot and stuff, very little memory of Sesame Street.
I mean, even I watched it when I was a young lad, in the early 90s. It was part of everyone's like childhood, right? Yeah. Sesame Street was on TV.
And then I got really into Muppet Treasure Island when I was about seven or eight years old. And I'd gone overseas to see my family when I was a kid. And my cousin, he's my second cousin, he'd done special effects on a bunch of movies, and he'd mentioned that he'd worked on Muppet Treasure Island with Kermit. And like as a 7 year old, I understood Kermit. Yeah. And I was like, you worked with Kermit?
He was like,
it's really cool. He just like sat in a chair and like, and just talks all day. And I was like, oh, cool. And so I'd come back home to Australia, and then we must've found a copy of, I think it was the Muppet Treasure Island and the Muppet movie in like a 2-pack.
Yep.
And I was like, Mom, we have to get it. Like I need to watch this movie that like my cousin's worked on because I loved him. He was just like, he's a giant big kid. And so we just got up to so much mischief with him. And then I was like, got to see his stuff. And I watched Muppet Treasure Island an annoying amount of time. Shannon can attest to how much I've already like been quoting it recently. Oh,
like we were talking about which one we're up to in terms of watching the movies.
Yeah.
And we're getting around the Treasure Island one. And you just kept quoting it. And I was like, I haven't watched it yet.
You're like, how do you know what is going on? But yeah, so that was the main one. And then I'd seen the Muppet movie as well, but it didn't resonate as a child as much.
Mm.
And then, yeah, that was pretty much me on the Muppets until the last 2 weeks where we just got into
it and really
smashed them.
We know a lot about the Muppets now.
And then we went and watched, which we'll get into as we keep talking about it, but we watched this documentary that just dropped on Disney Plus, and it's like Jim Henson's Untold Story.
Yeah.
And Oh my God. If any of you are even remotely interested in just filmmaking, whether it's the Muppets or not, watch this documentary. It is so entertaining and so like heartfelt and interesting and just
it's beautiful
well
film.
Put together.
Yeah, it's a really well, beautiful documentary style film.
Yeah, it gives you an idea on his life, but it also shows all these like other creative things Jim Henson was doing that I had no idea about.
He was involved in so much. It was like there's no – someone would say he was working like 2 days straight, like no sleep and just working. This man was just involved in so many different projects and he was a lover of the art form of just filmmaking in general. Like he never wanted to just be in puppetry, but obviously it was an entry gate for him and he was hoping to move on to other things. But of course he was just so good at it and kind of, was a pioneer of the puppetry in I guess US TV at the time.
Yeah.
It became his thing. And like I remember there was one point in the documentary they were like he's looking at moving into designing nightclubs.
Yeah, cuz he was such a like art housey.
Yeah, he wanted to design these different things and like different ways of like projecting light in nightclubs and stuff and then I think he eventually landed Sesame Street after that. Like that concept came into fruition. And someone was like, I'm so thankful that he went down the children's like learning TV shows than nightclubs.
Had you seen previously, because obviously when you watch that documentary, there's the little bit where he's doing Kermit and the little girl's
I've
seen that so many times. Yeah. And it's a scene, it's from one of the episodes of Sesame Street and he's singing the ABCs as Kermit with this little girl. And she's just being a little cheeky kid and every now and then she'll just throw in like Cookie Monster.
Yeah.
And then he's getting real sassy with her and he's like, well, fine, do it with Cookie Monster next time. And he like walks away. And then she just goes, I love you. And he comes back and then she gives him a little kiss. It's so sweet. It's like the heart of.
Yeah. It's what Sesame Street is. And it was wildly successful. Wildly successful. It's obviously still going today. But it's, he became the person that basically just taught everyone's kids, like, in the mornings and watching TV and stuff. It was crazy. There's a lot about his, growing up years that I wasn't aware of.
I had no idea anything about him, really.
Yeah, like, obviously, he's like, the puppet guy. Like, but knowing the intricacies of how he got there, what was his ideas, where he kind of came up with these things, it was such an insightful documentary. So I definitely recommend anyone listening to this who has, you don't even need to be into Muppets, but like it's an interesting slice of time and place and life and stuff around this concept. And it was really, it was directed by Ron Howard.
Yeah, and it was interesting as well. I was watching it and once they get to him being in Sesame Street, they talk about one of the main reasons he even did it was because they funded like internal to the show of Sesame Street. He could do like five semi-educational short films and he just did all these experimental films, which sort of then rung a bell in my memory. I was like, Sesame Street was a bit
abstract in the early 90s or like before that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That song, the 1, 2, 3, 4, five, six, I can remember that vividly. It was wild. I was like, oh, flashback.
Yeah, it just...
And the little, it was like the stop motion little king character, the King of Eight or whatever it was. I remember that. It was wild.
Yeah, it's just, he's such a just genius guy. But I guess then he spawned all this stuff. So he was doing a bunch of work early on and then he had this idea for the Muppet Show because the Muppets were never for kids. Yeah. Originally, they ended up on late night TV to start with. And then they got eventually the Muppet Show, which they pushed and pushed
rejected by all the US networks.
And that's why they ended up doing productions in
UK.
The UK.
Yeah.
And then they ended up with this variety show set in a theatre run by Kermit the Frog.
Which I think is genius.
And I watched about 4 or 5 episodes maybe of this. And oh my God, is it enjoyable. Like I think there's a couple movies I love and then The Muppet Show. I want to keep watching this so much. I watched the Julie Andrews episode I was like, this is the greatest thing. It's like two parts of my childhood just put into one.
Merging together.
Because I think there's only 3 seasons on Disney Plus, but there's five. All up.
Yeah. That's weird though.
And it's
maybe
so
it's licensing.
Genius.
Yeah.
Could have been Lost too.
Yeah, it could have been Lost episodes. They threw out a lot back in the 70s.
Yeah.
So interesting. Yeah, I've watched the first episode of The Muppet Show ready for this episode just to get an idea of it. And I'm thankful for I was because it's referenced in a couple of movies very heavily, which I was glad I kind of got the gist of it. But the fact that it was rejected by nearly every major studio in the US. Like he was pretty popular before that with a few other things. Yeah. He did a lot of like ad, he did a few little segments on other people's shows and then did a few ads in between those as well using the Muppets. But so he was known, but then, and obviously Sesame Street was 1 year in, so that was huge as well. Mm-hmm. And then he wanted to do his own thing. It's just surprising they kept saying no to him.
Yeah.
But then the Muppet Show came out.
It's surprising how smart the Muppet Show is as well. Like it's not, it's PG and that kids can watch it, but it's so adult.
The fact that
the ideas.
Yeah, it's layered. It's very layered. The fact that they could do an episode in a week.
Yeah.
That was impressive.
The amount of work that goes into the puppetry is just mind blowing.
Did you pick up on, there was a really quick throwaway line as to why the Muppets are called Muppets?
Yeah, I did. This was you so clever. Up? Yeah. So, because they're not quite puppets, they're not quite marionettes.
They call them Muppets.
They're Muppets.
I was like, because I never really knew why Muppets. I was like, yeah, okay, it's puppets. Maybe it's just a play on words.
Yeah.
But no, marionette and puppet is Muppets.
Yeah, yeah. And his wife as well had a lot to do with it in the early, early days.
Yeah.
Just watch the documentary, guys. Like, I can't. Yeah, it's called, so smart.
It's called Jim Henson's Idea Man, and it only just dropped in the last week on Disney Plus. It's not going to be the first little picture on new on Disney Plus. And I'm so thankful we waited a week to record, because we were going to do this last week and to get time to watch this. It was very insightful. Very insightful. Really cool.
I don't think I necessarily like have the time. We have the time to get into each individual film that they've done. Potentially. But
I would
like,
say we could talk about them in three lots. There's the three original trilogies. So the Muppet Movie, Great Muppet Caper, The Muppets Take a Manhattan is like one chunk.
Yeah.
And then you've got the second chunk of movies, which is The Muppet Christmas Carol, Muppets Treasure Island, and then Muppets from Space, which is the 90s films, which are like adaptions of things and stuff like that. Then you got the revival series, which is The Muppets from 2011 and then The Muppets Most Wanted in 2014.
I want to bring up briefly too. Obviously, there's The Dark Crystal and then Labyrinth, because you've never seen these.
I haven't seen those two.
Truly insane.
I think
but
I want to just buy them because they are not on any streaming service. Anyone.
Really?
Not on a single one. I looked them all up.
I watched a couple of years ago. I definitely have Labyrinth. And I watched this one not knowing really that it was connected to Jim Henson as a kid. My friend was really into Bowie because her dad was into Bowie. So she'd seen it. She's like, you've got to see this film. It's like the greatest thing. Watch it. And I don't know, we picked it up from somewhere and I was about 11. So I was at that age where movies were hit and miss because you were just like in that.
You weren't sure
whether you wanted kid stuff or adult stuff. And I got Labyrinth and I was like, what?
What is this?
What is this? And then
is this one with Jennifer Connelly?
Jennifer Connelly and Bowie and his bulge, because that's 90% of the film is just.
He's really tight bulge.
Yeah, it's a lot for kids.
It's not a kid's film.
I remember then obviously rewatching it and it's such a just stroke of genius, but just so confusing, but just has this cult status because there's nothing else
like it
at all. And I think he'd previously done the Dark Crystal, which was all little puppets, but he learned after doing the Dark Crystal that if you're going to make a movie with puppets, you need at least one human character in it to get people to go on board with the journey, which obviously he'd done previously in a lot of his films.
Well, I mean, in nearly every Muppet film has like a big staple of their films is cameos.
Mm-hmm.
Like they play other characters, like they're not themselves usually. They're playing characters in them, but it's a cameo role. Like if you think the first one, it had Steve Martin as the waiter.
Yeah.
Which I think was fantastic. There's a bunch of other people as well. But each one has a cameo. A huge cameos in them.
Yeah, the Muppet Movie was just the first one they did, but it was just great. It's like a meta retelling of how the Muppets all came together.
To get onto the Muppet Show. And it was filmed outside. So it was the first kind of thing where they filmed Muppets actually outside. Because I can remember when I watched them in chronological order. That scene where Kermit's riding the bicycle through the town.
Yeah.
And I was like, how on earth did they do that? Like, I don't know how they do it. Because I was watching all the puppetry stuff when they're underneath them and doing them in a studio. I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. But when he was riding a bike, I was like, I don't know what you're doing. How are you doing this?
It's so genius.
How are you doing this? And we need to, I think, really call out like how standout that first song is in the Muppets movie.
Rainbow Connection.
With his
little banjo.
It hits harder every time you hear it, especially at the end of watching that documentary after watching the eight films, knowing the history of it and then watching that documentary, I was like, oh, that's hitting real hard right now, that Rainbow Connection
song. Oh, I
song.
Love it. I think I used to know it as a kid, and I don't yeah, even
beautiful,
know why.
Beautiful song.
And then as a teenager, I found a Hayley Williams cover of it with
oh,
someone
really?
Else.
Oh, cool. I didn't know.
With Weezer. And like, it used to be
that's
on my iPod.
Awesome.
Yeah. It used to be on my iPod all yeah. the time, which yeah. so random. But yeah, no, I love that song.
It's such
I love Kermit.
I love Kermit. I do love Kermit.
I know that you're supposed to because he's like the one.
He's
but
the grounded character central to the. Yeah.
But he's just so lovable.
Yeah. That movie, I realized the first one was really cool. How they all got together. It was a really like heartfelt kind of fun movie. It's even framed as a movie in a movie too, mm-hmm. which I really thought was really cool.
It's that smart meta thing
yeah.
that the Muppets always have, like
they
the awareness
yeah.
of
yeah, they're very self-aware.
The fact that they're Muppets.
Yeah, but they're in the real, but they're in the real world
in the
as
real
well.
World
it's
as well.
Really weird. The second one wasn't as great. The Muppet Caper was,
no.
it was kind of a misfire. It was more Miss Piggy's movie.
Yes.
So much that she gets framed for stealing some gems and then she gets yeah. put in jail and she has to break out and save the other guys. It's fine. It's fine. There's some other cameos in it as well. Like they're all great. I wouldn't say there's a bad Muppet movie,
no.
but it's less memorable
mm-hmm.
than the others. And then the third one you had Muppets Take Manhattan.
Yeah.
So I had to rent this one.
I know.
So this one is, I don't think it's less to do with the Jim Henson Company because this one's Frank Oz directs it entirely himself. And I have a feeling it's not owned by – I think he just did this on his own at some point because
yeah.
it's not on Disney Plus or anything.
Well,
it's not connected to anyone.
Different rights at a lot of points and maybe they
yeah.
didn't buy this one back.
Yeah, I don't know. But it wasn't anywhere, so it was hard to find. So I rented it and I told you, I was like, quick, this is you've got 2 days to watch
okay,
this.
the best scene in The Muppets Take Manhattan is the chase scene with Miss Piggy on the rollerblades.
Oh, my God, that is great. It's outside in Central Park
yeah.
and she's chasing some dude.
He stole her handbag.
yeah. And she's on the rollerblades just going after him. And it's classic
oh.
Miss Piggy, right?
Oh, like, full of rage.
If you know Kermit as a character, like you know Miss Piggy as a character. She's
so
like
good.
Completely masking her inability to be anything like experience it. Like she's not good at acting. She's not good at dancing or any. She knows that.
Yeah.
But she'll mask it.
Just to be close to Kermit.
Yeah, just be close to Kermit and
she's
anyone
so
else.
In love with him.
She's got huge walls up that
uh-huh.
that lady.
That little pig. That little lady pig.
lady pig. But she's a really, you can do a lot with her character. She's
mm-hmm.
a very interesting character, whereas someone like Fozzie Bear, it's, look, he's a little,
waka,
he's,
waka, waka.
You need to have him there because
yeah.
he is useful, but
yeah.
he's a very one
mm-hmm.
note character, which is fine. I like Animal.
Oh, Animal's my favorite.
Animal's great.
He's my little icon on Disney Plus.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, great. He's so cool. I mean, it's a little bit politically incorrect in the first couple of movies where he's
yeah.
chasing after a lady going, women, women.
Yeah.
but
look,
you're like, look, it was a time and place.
It's of its time. Also, as far as those things kind of go, it is quite an innocent version of that
oh,
anyway.
Yeah.
So
look,
it's fine.
And Animal, he's a cool character. Like, I like how he's the drummer.
Uh-huh.
And there's I forget which movie later on, and he's like told not to drum. And then he's got the little
isn't
animals.
That the Muppets, the Muppets, the new one with
I think it is. I think
Jason
it is.
Siegel and stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's that one.
I think it's that one because he's told not to drum or he hasn't
he
drummed
goes,
for
yeah, no, it is because he goes to therapy.
That's right. And Jack Black's there.
Jack Black's there.
anyway, we'll get to those later.
And
then Muppets Take Manhattan, that's when they get married. Right
yes.
at the end. Although I think it's retconned and they don't really acknowledge it in later,
no,
later films.
Because there's one thing with Miss Piggy loves him. Kermit's like...
Doesn't
yeah.
really. It's fine.
I like you, Miss Piggy, but also like I got other things going on.
Yeah,
and
I think that's
do we need
the,
to be married?
It's more, it's better. It works better when they're not, when she's still chasing
yeah.
him. It works better. So they do get married in Muppets Take Manhattan
yep.
at the end. But it's mostly just ignored for the rest of the movies.
Yeah. I feel like it's in her mind they got married and he's like, did we?
It could have been a dream sequence.
Vegas?
Who knows?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So those first three were heavily influenced by Jim Henson. And
yeah.
he was definitely involved in there because the next three actually took place after his death.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I think it was a really heavy time and heavy toll on everyone involved at the studio or like the production
mm-hmm.
company because – when you watch the documentary, you realize how close everyone is in this team, in this
mm-hmm.
company. So when you lose someone as integral as Jim Henson, it's going to take a toll on everyone and also just the creative spark needed. And so it definitely took a different direction in the second kind of trilogy, I would say.
That being said, I really do love these ones.
I think they played it smart.
The first two, I love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they played it smart by doing established stories.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have to write their own kind of thing and just using Muppets where they made it funny, I think, yeah.
Yeah, so the first one they have is The Muppet Christmas Carol, 1992. Now, if you're going to watch any of the Muppet, like any of the Christmas Carol films during Christmas,
yeah,
The Muppet Christmas Carol is the one to watch.
There's about seven.
I famously kind of hate Christmas movies. Like, I just don't. It's not for me.
I don't love the story of A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. It's fine. Like, it's a cool, it's a fine story. It's.
I watched this, not The Christmas Just Gone, the one before that.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was just because I was emotional, but when Tiny Tim was dying, I had a little bit misty-eyed and I was like, am I crying
over
Tiny?
You mean the frog?
Tiny Tim, his little nephew, played by his nephew. Oh, that got me. I think it's a genius film and I'll keep talking about it.
Michael Caine, as a straight guy,
amongst all of these Muppets is just...
Because apparently that's the only reason he signed on to it, Michael Caine to play Scrooge, was he's like, I'll play against these Muppets, but I'm playing it straight. I'm playing this as if it's a role played out of the novel itself. And I won't acknowledge that they're Muppets at all, but I'll play it straight as. And he did really well. The biggest standout, I think, is his acting in this is really good.
He's so emotional. And it's with the Muppets.
Biggest letdown, I think, is there's not much Kermit in this.
No.
It's not. Very much his film around the Muppets. Yeah. But other than that, I think it's fine. The next one's the best one.
It's my favorite. And I was disappointed to learn that my favorite also happened to be the best one.
Yeah, because then you're like, oh.
The rest were like, no, I can't say they're a letdown because they're not a letdown, but.
It's harder to.
It was harder to love them the same way I love Treasure Island.
It's not really a bad Muppets film.
It's not a bad Muppets film.
But they're all enjoyable. But this one,
Tim Curry.
Yeah, Tim as Curry.
Long John, as Miss Piggy calls him. So good. I love this one. She's just so hussy in this one because obviously she was married to Kermit Captain Smalley.
Yeah.
But then also there was the next guy. And then there was this one. He goes, oh, Benjamina, not him too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So good.
Yeah, they play her up.
She's like, what was that pig supposed to do? You left me here. Like, lose the mind. Oh, this one brought back Rizzo the Rat. And I think, well done, because I love Rizzo in this one.
Rizzo gets forgotten a lot, about a lot, especially the new ones.
Yeah.
He is gone. He's completely gone. After Muppets in Space, done.
I'm not happy about that. Rizzo the Rat in this movie.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah, he's in this. He was heavily in A Muppets Take Manhattan. Because he works in the pizza shop. He works in the pizza shop and there's all the rats that work there too.
I just love in this one how there's obviously they're telling the story of Treasure Island, but inside that film, they also have him basically running a holiday scheme for rats on vacation.
That was the best takeaway. Yeah. And they're always in the background scenes of stuff. As if it's like, oh, we're just visiting this part of the set.
Yeah. Margaritas at the Midnight Buffet. Yeah. Yeah. I know all the songs.
I know you do. You know it a lot, but I've only seen it once.
Oh, my sister and I, like, it was just one of those movies as a kid that you just find and you just cling onto and you watch it.
Well, it's like me with Scooby-Doo, enough times when I was younger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is so funny.
I didn't notice, like, obviously there was a voice change after the first trilogy to this trilogy.
I didn't notice it.
No, I think they did very well with, like, Kermit's voice in that from Jim Henson. What I picked up on when I was watching the documentary, if we're going to talk about that again, is watching him speak really off-putting.
Yeah.
Because he's got, like, most of his voice is Kermit. He doesn't do too much
Kermit
to change it.
Or Ernie.
Yes. Ernie as well.
Ernie from Ernie and Bert.
So it was really weird watching this man speak normally just to a group of people and it's like, no, that's Kermit.
Yeah, because we know him as Kermit. The voice is Kermit so distinctly. Mm. And then it's like, this is not the voice of a grown man.
Yeah, it was wild. Really cool. All right, we'll get into Muppets from Space.
I remember very little of this one. I won't lie to you.
I reckon this is probably the weakest of all the films.
Yeah, it's weird.
I think it was a very bizarre film.
It's sort of Gonzo.
Very 1999. It's his spin-off.
Whatever it is.
Yeah.
Gets contacted by aliens through his breakfast cereal and then men in black kidnap him and Kermit has to go and rescue him. It is very strange.
It was very 1999. Men in Black had just come out.
That makes a lot of sense.
It was very, very of the time and era. It was... It was fine, but it was not. It's definitely the weakest film. Gonzo-centric makes it a bit weak because he's not the, I don't know, he's not the fun.
I love Gonzo as an ensemble. I don't think he's good leading.
He didn't hold it. He didn't hold it together. And it had, who was that guy? Oh, he's in a bunch of stuff. He's
David Arquette?
No.
Ray Liotta?
No, it was none of those.
Okay, well, I've written some names down.
I don't know who they are. Well, I know who they are. They weren't in it. The bald one who's in Arrested Development as the dad. I can't remember his name. Everyone will know who that is, but he's in it as like the bad FBI guy. And I was like, he plays every character this way. And I don't know. It was just a very simple premise that probably just didn't quite land.
Yeah, I don't think this one, I don't know. It wasn't as good as a lot of the other ones, but you know,
yeah,
you're like, what, 8 Muppet films in at that point?
Yeah, well, out of 8, that would have been 6.
Yeah, like, you know, there's...
we made it to the second end of the second trilogy, and I was like, yeah, it's fine.
There's a lot of pre-existing stuff to do.
It did introduce to the world the Muppet of the Prawn.
Yes, Pepe the Prawn.
Pepe the Prawn. It was his introduction into the Muppets, which I thought was great. He's a cool character.
I like Pepe the Prawn.
Pepe the Prawn. And he's the cook in the Muppets house.
Is he not in anything else before that?
No.
Weird, because I remember him from my childhood, but maybe he was on like Sesame Street or something at some
point.
Could
have been somewhere, yeah.
Because I feel like I know him too much to have never, maybe it's
Wild,
Sesame
right?
Street.
Yeah, it just all blends together. Did you enjoy how they explained how Ralph was made?
Half a basketball. Yeah, Ralph was cool.
I like him. He's the pianist.
Yeah.
He's the pianist in a lot of the movies as well. Yeah, and... I liked in Muppets in Space, I like how they make them all live in the same house. Like that was a cool concept.
Yeah, like a frat house.
It's a frat house.
Yeah.
And, the part where he's like mowing out the front and sleeping. I was like, yeah. There's parts I did like.
Has there been a bad Muppet film? I'm yet to have seen one. There's a couple that like I haven't seen yet, but I think I've watched like 99% of them.
Yeah, there's a few spin-off movies that were like lesser, but we're talking about the core eight films that were actually released in cinemas and stuff. But that pretty much gets us to the final two, which is the revival.
Yeah, I've got some series things to say.
Yeah, you didn't love The Muppets 2011?
No, I didn't I didn't not love it. It's The Muppets, so
yeah.
I'm going to have a fun time regardless. There were just a couple of plot points for this one that just felt a little...
weird?
Yeah, look, watching it in 2024, it's a little dated.
Which is weird. It's not that long. Weird, it's like 12 years?
I feel like this one's somehow more dated than the earliest Muppet films that were dated.
They can be timeless though.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
They can be.
Yeah,
it was weird because essentially this is the story of a Muppet fanatic. And he grows up living with his brother, Jason Segel, and then
Amy Adams is the girlfriend.
But it's sort of, how do I say this correctly? What it seems like, and I asked Shannon, I was like, am I just noticing something that's not there?
Yeah.
And Shannon's like, no, felt like is a very contrived story of like someone that's intellectually younger, potentially mentally disabled.
Yes.
Who then is attached to their older siblings or other siblings who then look after them forever. Because the story is like he's stuck with his brother, like, you know, always having to do stuff with him and like lives with him, even though they're both the same age, but like one's a Muppet and one's a human.
One's a human, one's a Muppet. So.
And that's weird.
The framing of it's odd. Like it's an odd concept. And one, I can see why they did it.
Me too.
But two, it also definitely felt like that's what that character
was supposed to be.
Like maybe it wasn't supposed to be, but that's what we got.
That's what we got, yeah. And then sort of there's this whole, am I a man or a Muppet? And then at
there's
the end of the time,
song.
He's like, oh, you then, it won an Oscar. You're then like, you know what, like the Muppets are who I'm supposed
Really? He eventually lands with strange. Like being a Muppet, but then... also the song is sung by Jason Segel as well.
But then he's like, supposed to be like, the fact is, he's played by a Muppet, but he's supposed to be a human person, but then he ends up being... It's just... look, maybe watch it and tell me what you guys think.
I understand why they needed to do that for the plot.
Me too.
Like for the drive of this story and this narrative, because it's a big part of this narrative is... the Muppets have been forgotten by society, right? Like, because in real life, it's been like, 20 plus years, even besides a successful movie. Before that, it's been 40 years since they were relevant.
Yeah.
So that's a really big incorporated part into the plot point is how do we get the Muppets back together and be successful and relevant again to society? Because they go back to the studios where it was filmed and they realize it's derelict and someone's trying to take over the studios and...
Kermit lives in this mansion without Miss Piggy.
Yeah, it's like everything's kind of broken. How do we fix it kind of storyline?
Okay, my favorite cameo in this movie. Oh my God. So basically Miss Piggy is running a fashion empire in France and so they go there to get Miss Piggy back and they run into like someone working like an assistant working the desk who just like is trying to gatekeep and it's Emily Blunt reprising her role from The Devil Wears Prada and it was
very well done.
Chef's kiss, yeah, amazing. It was
very well done.
Yeah, that was my favorite cameo.
Yeah, that was good because she basically tries to keep them out and stuff. Exactly like The Devil Wears Prada. It was very good. There was a few other ones in there I just can't remember off the top of my head, but it was...
Rashida Jones is there.
Yeah, she's agent. Like the agent because she... initially says no on bringing the Muppet, because the idea is bringing the Muppet Show back for a one-off special to make enough money to save the studio. And so she's the agent trying to successfully get it up and running, help them out with what such and such. And she was fine. I felt like she was just playing Rashida Jones though.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
She didn't do much, but no. I was enjoying it anyway.
It was fine. It was fine. And it was a good film. And I think Jason Segel did really well. Amy Adams acted her chops off. Yeah,
there's nothing to fault the people that made this film. Everyone did their part above and beyond and it banked on a lot of nostalgia from the original Muppet Show. I think it was a very smart way and a meta way, a Muppet way to revive. Perfect, right?
The Muppets.
The Muppets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with you entirely. I think the fact that it's hitting so many audiences with that, with the nostalgia from the 40s, 40 years ago from the Muppet Show, you're bringing in the older clientele. I mean, it's kiddie enough looking to bring in the younger kids.
The kids.
And I think everyone just likes a good Muppet film.
Yeah.
And Jason Segel's pretty bankable with he's done a bunch of stuff around
the 2011. He was big at the time.
He was just coming off, I think, How I Met Your Mother and that. So I think it was a very good film to revitalize the brand.
I think so.
And that's when we get into what I think is probably one of the most chaotic Muppet films I've ever seen.
I loved this one.
And I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I reckon a lot more people should see it. Is Muppets Most Wanted. On 2014. So Muppets 2011 made a lot of money.
It did.
It was very successful.
I never saw it. I was in early high school. I was about 15.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough. That's probably the hardest demographic for wanting to go see it. 15 to probably 20.
Maybe I was younger than that. 25. I don't know. I was around that age anyway.
It was super successful when it released. So they obviously warranted a sequel, which is funny because the first song is there is basically we have to make a sequel as a song. And yet, lo and behold, they've got heaps of cameos in this, but what they did was, and what I think is a really smart, relevant way of keeping the Muppets, going in today's society, is to make it as chaotic as possible. So how do they continue from the Muppets? The last one is doing a one-off show to get the Muppet Show back on air. And they're like, what do we do now?
Yeah. Now that they're on air.
We take it on a world tour.
Yeah.
And I think it's genius because they get to go all around different locations and different scenarios and stuff. And at the same time, there's a whole heist caper happening.
Yeah, so we get to see the lovely Tina Fey and the way we get to see Tina Fey being a Russian villain, which accent be damned, it's fun to watch. She basically is looking after Kermit, who ends up in a gulag, which second time we've mentioned that today.
Gulag today.
He
gets framed.
Framed.
By the other evil frog.
Evil frog.
Constantine. Who, the only difference between the look of the two of them is one's got a mole. And one of my favorite scenes in this film is Kermit's walking down this alleyway, right? Because he's kind of getting told to go down the alleyway. He's being framed. He walks down and out of the middle of nowhere, you just see this masked figure run up to him and then just slap a mole on his face. And then the other masked figure just legs it. And he's like, what happened? And then everyone looks down at the alleyway and it's like, Constantine. So he gets framed instantly because he's got a mole stuck to his face. It's done in a very comical way.
It's so good. And then, so basically he's just like, oh no, I'm in a gulag. How do I get out? But then they're like, no, we need you to teach us how to do our prison musical.
Yeah. Very bizarre because they've got not only Ray Liotta, one of the Flight of the Conchords, and Machete in there as some of the prisoners that he's teaching.
It's so bizarre.
So bizarre. So
that's his story.
Yeah, there's two stories.
And then...
Really.
Basically, they're on the world tour, but they don't realize that Kermit's not Kermit until quite late in the film.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh no, we have to go get Kermit back. And yeah. Kermit's like, it took you this long?
Yeah, it took you this long to realize it wasn't me. Yeah, because they're getting manipulated by their agent who is played by Ricky Gervais.
Yeah.
As, was it like Harry Badman or something?
Something like that.
It's French, it's Badman. It means good. And they're just like, oh yeah, let's sign off because they're playing naive.
Because look, apart from Kermit, the Muppets are pretty, pretty dim.
They're pretty silly. But it plays into really fun scenarios when they're, you know, played innocently naive. Mm-hmm. This one's just chaos though. Absolute chaos. I read up into why it didn't do well. Apparently, obviously, because of the really strong Gulag/Russian premise of it and around the political landscape of 2014 around that time period. And it was, I think it was just release marketing schedules and stuff like that. So it just didn't get the best release time frame as obviously the Muppets to 2011. But this is where we got some of the like greatest things out of. Like we got the meme, you know how like Kermit's looking at the evil Kermit and that's in this and some great songs in there. So it's all done by Brett McKenzie, who's the other Flight of the Conchords. Mm-hmm. He's the guy who's in charge of the music. So they both, Flight of the Conchords are making these.
Jermaine Clement.
Jermaine's the other one. Yeah. So they're both involved in the music. So it's really catchy. And it's really that kind of like modernized the song tunes from the old ones. It's really well done.
You know what bit I really loved in this is when Kermit goes, no one could tell it wasn't me. And Animal goes, Animal could tell. And he's like, only Animal could tell.
Because he knew straight away. He was like, bad frog.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Animal's great in this, obviously.
Love that.
Animal's fantastic. But yeah, yet again, really good Muppets movie. Probably one of my favorite ones out of all the eight that I watched.
I think apart from like all the heart and stuff and like how smart it is, part of the genius of the Muppets is just how chaotic the Muppets are.
And how chaos they can look.
Just always just absolutely mental. And it's fun.
It is fun. It is fun.
Yeah, I would encourage anyone who hasn't seen the Muppets in a while, just pick one of them.
Yeah.
Just pick one. Pick Treasure Island.
Treasure Island, Most Wanted. They're probably your best two to go to. Even the original. I love the original.
Yeah. And just watch a fun film for a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, it'll capture you in terms of like hysterics, some heart, and just an adventure. It's a bit of fun. That's all you need from it. If that's all you want from your movie, you don't need to think too hard. You're going to get a perfect time.
Yeah. And that's pretty much us on the Muppets.
On the Muppets.
So as always, thank you so much for listening. If you're enjoying this podcast, please give it a follow. And if you'd like to get in touch, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at BingeList. Or if you want to go the old school way, you can shoot us an email at bingelistandboxofficehits@gmail.com. And as always, happy Monday, happy listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you so much, guys.
Bye.